the Secretary of State to really look at the performance measurements in the system, the way the state was doing it, and to develop some guidelines for future uses of performance measurement. An interim work group met during the 0103 session, interim, and developed these guidelines, adopted some common language that all agencies would be expected to use, and also developed some standardized reporting forms. Now, this was a change from what was done previously. While we had reported performance measurements for quite a while, agencies were really free to present them in whatever manner they liked, use whatever terms they liked, and change them in, whenever they liked. So it was very difficult to have any kind of consistency across agencies, difficult for people, the public, members, anyone else to really be able to follow performance measurements from agency to agency. So one of the goals of this work group and the guidelines was to just provide some consistency, some standardization for all performance measurements. And I'll refer to the budget books you have in front of you in a little bit, and we can walk through some of these forms. But last session was the first session that this was really in effect. Prior to session, a review team, the performance measurement review team, reviewed all the measures and provided some input. And those kind of review forms were also submitted along with the budgets and all the performance measurement forms. Last session, as you know, if you were on Ways and Means, each subcommittee reviewed the agency's performance measures. They either suggested modifications, suggested further work, and then each subcommittee formally adopted the performance measures in work session. And this was a formal vote by the subcommittee. We'll be doing the same thing this session, with just a few other changes that I'll be going into. Some agencies were required to do some kind of follow-up reporting during the interim. They were directed to appear before usually the Joint Legislative Audit Committee to provide whatever changes that the subcommittee and the full Ways and Means adopted from this prior session. And we also had a review of requests to change measures. And in this process, it was decided that we really shouldn't be changing measures during the interim. We wanted, again, to have consistency, stability, so that you would have the ability to have a time series over time. One of the problems when you're constantly churning measures, changing targets, is you can't really look at performance over a long-term period of time. So we're really trying to impose some stability, I keep using that word, but that's probably the key word for this whole process, over how agencies perform. Now, agencies are able to bring forward any changes they would like, but during the interim, it was decided that we would go through a formal process this session for each of the subcommittees and the full Ways and Means to review any requests to modify measures, and then to vote if they agreed with those modifications or not. And of course, subcommittees have the ability to impose or request their own modifications to the measures if they find something's lacking, if they're not happy with maybe there's a hole where they see that there's a hole in the budgets and the budget system and how it ties to whatever performance they're looking at.
Mr. Chairman.
A question, Senator Carter.
Your pleasure in terms of questioning. Would you rather
questions
question
as we go is fine.
Thank you. The question then begins, if you discourage the changing of performance measures during session, I really do understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose there were a situation where you received a management plan. Do you see the management plans that agencies get when they have been audited? Do we, as Ways and Means Office, receive those?
Co-chair, Senator Carter, the management plan from the Secretary of State's office.
Yeah, if an agency has been audited,
right,
in terms of their outcomes, their performance, and there were some suggestions or some alterations or whatever done, and that management plan, a management plan is given to them, does that come to you folk? Or is that kept in the Secretary of State's office?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I personally have never seen one or received one. That may be because we haven't gotten the management plans. My agencies haven't been audited and received a management plan. That might be the reason for that. We do see the audits, and we see audit suggestions. And I would expect that if the Secretary of State were to audit an agency's and an agency's performance and make suggestions on how they could adjust their performance measures or add performance
measures.
That's
what a management plan is.
Yep, I would think that they would need to bring those forward. But they would be, at this point, they would be on their own to bring forward those changes in a request to modify. We put together information on audits that we present for the presentation. We put it all in material that each subcommittee gets. So I would hope that those management plans would be in that material, and we can certainly make sure if they're out there that they are.
I would like to get rid of the adjectives such as we would hope, because you're right.
We will.
Those are the kind of things. I'd like to make a formal request that if there are management plans that comes to any agency as a result of performance measures, then I would like to request that those management plans be sent formally to the Ways and Means Committee.
We've actually chatted about this a little bit, and I think that's fine. I don't think we'd have a problem. It's basically we get the audits, and why not just get the management plan that is the cover letter for right. those audits, regardless as to whether or not I think it relates to performance measures. Just
right.
any audit that's done would be helpful for the committees to look at that and see what suggestions have come out, as well as looking at the audit itself.
Right.
Well, that's a good request.
Now, Mr. My whole thought about this is that if we are talking about efficiencies in government, and if we're talking about more transparency in government, then it would just appear to me that the management plans would be something that if it's good, we give kudos. If there are corrections, then let's see them in their presentation before this committee. I just think that that is the way to go in order for us to be able to be on top of efficiencies in government.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems in the last session we went halfway through or three-quarters through the session, and all of a sudden the Department of Human Resources came up with different information. And so you were doing this performance measuring system. Are there any steps being taken to make sure that doesn't happen again? I mean, we're really relying upon what the agencies are telling us, and if it's not true, then we're going to have some problems.
We discussed that yesterday a little bit while you were snowed in or iced in. What we're going to try and do is make sure that the requests that come from members are shared with LFO and the co-chairs so we can kind of package these together. Not have multiple requests that are too similar. Hopefully we'll be able to share information and make sure that then when the agency gets a big project type request trying to get good numbers on a particular area that we'd be able to have some strength and reliance in those numbers, because they will have had adequate time to work through that because they're not going through a myriad of smaller project requests. So hopefully that's going to be our biggest hammer this coming session. Certainly I know the governor's office after our fiasco last session cleaned house a little bit, made it clear to the agency, one agency in particular, in DHS, that their numbers jumping all around were not acceptable and they'd have to clean up their act. So this session we'll have a chance to see how well that worked.
Just to follow up, sure. I mean, you, as I'm saying, if you're going to go with this new system and trying to justify whether the program is good or bad, how is this going to affect all of the this change in performance measures? I mean, is this what, or I guess is what we're talking about. But it seems to me that you've taken it in a whole entirely different direction, and we're going to have to maybe struggle with that.
We'll have to rely on their numbers to a degree, or good numbers, or LFO, or you. I think what's going to happen is the way it traditionally works in Ways and Means is that if members with their various expertises like Dr. Bates, some of the numbers or some of the conclusions the agency draws don't really ring true, you ask those questions and you challenge some of that in a positive and constructive way. And then we can get into, you know, what do those numbers really mean? Are they a representation of what we're actually trying to get at? So, yeah, this is what this process is all about. And with the performance outcomes, we're going to see a lot more numbers than anecdotes this session. So we'll have to rely on that information to make a good point. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue that Senator Carter raises is really one of management's response to these problems. And I would like to point out for Senator, Representative Richardson's benefit, refer to the response by DAS to the very issue that Senator Nelson has raised with respect to DHS, their response to the emergency board with a letter. It's item number 16 in our last session, and that response was totally inadequate. So I don't want to belabor that point, but while it's current, I just wanted to point that out.
Good point. Mr. Siebert.
Mr. Co-Chair, again, when agencies bring their performance measurements forward this time and you're looking at them, they will be the performance measures that were adopted by Ways and Means last session. So they will not have been able to change those. And they will be bringing a request if they feel a change is in order. So you will see the performance measures that were adopted plus any changes that you requested. And that will be consistent into this session. And with that, maybe we can look at the budget notebooks you have in front of you a little bit, and we can look at some agencies' actual performance measures, the forms and the reports. Each of you either have the Oregon State Board of Nursing or the Long-Term Care Ombudsman budget binder in front of you. If you have the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Office, and with any budget binder, you can find the performance measures under the Agency Summary tab. For the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, it starts on page 32. For the Oregon State Board of Nursing, you'll see they start on page 24. And the first form you will see is the links to Oregon benchmarks 0507. And these forms are consistent. Every agency is required to use this form to present their performance measurements. Briefly, you'll see the agency's name, a contact person that you can call to ask if you have questions about the performance measurement from the agency. You'll also see the agency's mission. In this case, the State Board of Nursing, the mission of the Oregon State Board of Nursing is to safeguard the public's health and well-being by providing guidance for and regulation of entry into the profession, nursing education, and continuing safe practice. You will also see a line that is where agencies should list their linkages to Oregon benchmarks or any other high-level outcomes that they've identified. And just a little bit of terminology, high-level outcomes, Oregon benchmarks would fall under that category. And those are large measures of societal well-being. No agency is in particularly responsible for those because there are so many different factors that can affect the change. For example, if you look, for those of you that have the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, they have a linkage to benchmark 51, sustaining substantiated elder abuse rate per 1,000 Oregonians age 65 and older. They have some part in that, and they like to track that measure, and they link to that measure, and their mission certainly does, but they by no means are the sole variable that affect change on that measure.
What page do you want?
For the long-term care odds, it starts on page 32.
32. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It seems as though in both your presentation and my experience, we continue to put heavier and heavier emphasis on linking to the benchmarks. And what I'm trying to figure out are what processes are in place that ensure the integrity of the benchmarks. How often are we checking them? What's the mechanism to make sure that what we're beginning to use as a foundation building block to judge agency performance against, what assures the integrity of those benchmarks? How often are they refreshed? How often do we make sure that they actually reflect a changing demographic or a changing societal perception of what is something worthy of tracking? I'm not being critical of them because, in general, I happen to be looking at the nursing board. In general, things like timeliness of complaint resolution and efficiency of e-commerce operations seem to me to be there's nothing very mysterious about that, but I just think that we should be alert to the fact that as long as we're building a framework against these benchmarks, that we know that the processes are in place to keep the benchmarks timely and accurate.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, just for clarification, the Oregon benchmarks are the responsibility of the Oregon Progress Board, and there's less than 100 of those. What you have in front of you, and when you see in each of the rows, those are just the agency's performance measures. So customer satisfaction, like for the nursing board, performance measurement number 1% of customers who rate the board positively in the following service areas, that's strictly an agency performance measurement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you for correcting me. You're absolutely right. I have mixed apples and oranges. Separate out the oranges, and let me go back to my apple question.
Certainly.
And that is, with...
That's good to have Betsy Johnson on this.
With the Progress Board, I know they were the subject of some discussion last session about funding, where they were going to get their support. They were encouraged to go outside and seek charitable foundation support. I'm just trying to at least raise the flag that how well they perform in delivering these benchmarks now has a superstructure built on top of it where there is reliance on the monitoring of those Oregon benchmarks. And it's really no more than that, just to say we're relying on them. We better make sure the data they're producing is timely and relevant.
I think, if I may, the whole idea, I think another huge benefit of the direction the state of Oregon's going with this outcome-based budgeting is that we can actually link the dollars we give to a specific result. And that's been what's lacking between Oregon benchmarks way up here, you know, near Olympus, and the rest of us plebes down here on Mother Earth. And so we're trying to find what, like you, I think you said, the superstructure or substructure that kind of builds towards that and will help the progress board hopefully be much more relevant to what we do here in the legislature. And that's kind of an underlying goal with all the projects.
You said more artfully where I was headed.
Representative Richardson and Senator Carter.
Mr. Chair, just to kind of continue on this theme about the relevancy of benchmarks, I think we need to, as a committee, also look to make sure that the benchmarks that are being measured are the ones that are getting that are going to lead to performance-based. For instance, one of them asks about the benchmark is a number of uninsured people in Oregon, you know, health uninsured, where the real question is the number of Oregonians who do not have access to health coverage, not whether or not they got an insurance policy, whether it's community-based health clinic or other sources of medical coverage. And so I think it would be timely to just look through to make sure that the questions asked are the ones that are going to lead to the performance that we want to measure, the outcomes, and not merely an output.
That's correct.
And also, I do agree, though, that we can't be changing them all the times because you don't get the continuity if you keep changing. If you keep moving the target, it's hard to zero in. But there can be some additions made that would focus on the outcomes that will really benefit this process.
Senator Carter.
Mr. Chairman, and I know all of you have heard this statement because it sounded very trite to me in 1985. And that is that one legislature could not bind the next legislature. When we first started doing benchmarks, they were nothing more than goals based on a 10-year period of time. And the reason it's based on 10-year period of time because government moves so slow and legislatures change things. The benchmarks were designed, let's say, with the whole program of Head Start. And I think Senator Gordley brought that issue up the other day. Well, we had a 10-year plan by when we would try to reach where every child that was not school age would be in a pre-K program. We couldn't mandate at the last minute, so that's how benchmarks came about. They're goals based on a long-term basis to see if we can reach them. They're not designed to be short-term goals that whips the legislature and agencies in position. So I think if we would think about them along those lines, you will see greater usefulness into why they're at Mount Olympus versus being maybe at Mount Hood. And so I think that if you really think about it, I think all of you would probably still want
the department looking at goals on those kind of more sustainable basis. If somebody were to tell the demand, the legislature to have done something last session and come back and do it this session with the position we're in fiscally, there would be no way we could do it. So what use would it be for the goals? But to work toward them on a more long-term sustained basis seems to make sense to me. So for those of us that were around at that time, that's what we were looking at.
Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And fully appreciating Margaret's comments. At the same time, while I think we have to keep a critical mass of the benchmarks as they currently exist, those up on Mount Olympus as it's been referenced here today, I know of nothing that prevents us as sub-chairs from developing our own measuring sticks, our own benchmarks for specific actions we would like to see the various departments, whatever the sub, in the work of our subgroups. So we can, it's a system designed to have both long-range targets and goals and then steps along the way to take the temperature. So
that's a good comment again. Senator Berger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. One of the things that concerns me about the benchmarks, and I appreciate the Senator Carter's explanation about what they really intended in the beginning, but by adding a lot of the benchmarks in the Oregon Target Board, we've taken agencies at the local level, like Commission on Children and Families, where you have two staff people, and they've now become, rather than active and making things happen that you can really see, they're planning. They're trying to spend all of this time. So an agency now has turned into a planning commission. So somewhere, to me, there needs to be a happy medium here, that the benchmarks are there, but that the agency itself, particularly these agencies that have very small staff, don't spend all of their time trying to match these benchmarks. Whether it's short-term goals or long-term goals.
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the risk of belaboring this issue, maybe I had a lapse in attention, but I think one of the questions that Representative Johnson asked was not answered, and that was, how do we know that the data that is provided to us is, in fact, accurate? And that it's and then the next issue is, you know, these benchmarks goals, to what extent are they actually used in a management plan for improvement? And that's something I think that maybe the subcommittees could delve into to a little greater extent, because top-down driven goals quite often, you know, are put on charts on the wall and then promptly forgotten. And so how these things are used and how accurate are they? I think those are two very critical issues.
And I think that's something that as every member of the subcommittees begin to discuss, is what are the best way to ensure that. We're looking forward as co-chairs to some suggestions. Audits is certainly one way, using employees like we've discussed in other venues to help give us information about how successful. There'll be a number, but that will be very helpful. We need to have that information. Senator Gorbachev.
Yeah, just an observation, Mr. Chair, and good morning. It would have been helpful to include as a part of this discussion, which is about linking benchmarks to performance measures, to actually have that partner, the Oregon Progress Board, the benchmark folks in the room with us. I understand that they have a updated report coming out soon. I'm not sure of the exact date, but the content of that report is surely going to be related to our work as a full committee and also in the sub. So again, just an observation. It's a little difficult to have a conversation without to help us have the conversation, and I really appreciate Senator Carter's historical perspective.
Senator Morissette.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair. I appreciate Senator Gordley's comments, because I was going to say, and I will still say it, I think we're dealing with the performance measures right now. The benchmarks are the bigger picture, but we keep hearing people referring to the benchmark problem. That we're dealing with performance measures. I think the benchmarks are helpful, but our immediate job is performance.
Mr. Sieber.
Co-Chair, Senator Morsett, that's exactly right. What our office looks at is the performance measures are really where the rubber hits the road. The benchmarks are the overall goal for Oregon. The Progress Board tracks those. The governor is the chair of the Progress Board. There are a number of public members. There are two members, one from the Senate, one from the House, that are appointed. The Progress Board is in charge of collecting the data for the benchmarks, for issuing reports on the benchmarks. But the performance measures, the agency-specific performance measures, are where you will be doing your work. And just to reiterate maybe or make a little bit clearer, there was a time when agencies were very much encouraged to link to benchmarks, and you had some very strange linkages. We've moved away from that. We really only want an agency to try to link what they do to one of the high-level benchmarks if there really is truly a linkage there. And so, for example, you'll see that in one of the agencies, the small agencies you're looking at, the Board of Nursing, they don't link to any of the benchmarks. And I think for the ombudsman, linking to the elder abuse rate, because what they do is they go into nursing homes, investigate abuse claims. So I think that's a very logical link, and that's really where we're trying to get to. And that's always been a difficult issue, is how to really marry the two, because sometimes there's a big gap between what an agency does and a performance measure or a benchmark way up here and the agency performance measurement. The agencies are responsible for collecting and managing the data on their performance measures. I do know that in some states that link much closer performance results to dollars, they have an entity that audits that data. Because of the importance of the results that are being reported. So I think that's something that we would need to, and you would need to be thinking about as we move forward, thinking about linking performance measurements with dollars and with the budget. To get back again briefly to the forms you have in front of you, I just talked a little bit about if the agency links, and that's at the very top, and you can see that the bulk of these of the rest of the report is all the agency's performance measures. That we ask that they link they list the goal that they have or that is linked to their mission on the form with their performance measurement. They list their performance measurement. They have a performance measurement number. They have, in some cases, the most recent information, which is the 2002 value, and then you'll see a 2007 target. The next column, column 7, is the estimated cost. That's an optional piece that was allowed this time, which I think maybe just a handful of agencies took advantage of, and that is to divide up their budget and list the amount of their budget that is related to that particular performance measurement. That's something that I'm sure we'll be discussing more, maybe for future reporting of performance measures. I know that in the discussion later about the presentations and the prioritized list of services, there is a place where agencies are to list if there is a performance measurement linked to that program. But this also was an optional piece this time, and that's why it's blank in both cases. Agencies were supposed to identify the lead unit or division that's linked to that performance measurement, and then the status. And I think that's a useful. The status column is useful. Piece because it tells you how long the agency's been tracking that information. So you get a sense of how long they've been looking at the same measure. Now, for the Board of Nursing, they have four pages of performance measures. And on the first page, if you don't have the Board of Nursing, maybe you can look at your neighbors, because on the second line, you'll see the very far column is request number, and that's linking to what we talked about before is requests to modify. And they have, that one is their first request, that's request number one. If you then turn to page 28 in the Oregon State Board of Nursing budget book, and it's the next form after all the performance measurements, you'll see the request to modify the 03-05 agency performance measurements for the 05-07 biennium. And this is the standardized way we have asked agencies to bring forward any requests to change their performance measures. So you will see the language for number one that's currently approved, and then the request to change. In this case, they're requesting to change the way they measure the number of calls that are answered by a live representative. They then provide the measure number that they're talking about and the rationale for the change that they're requesting. So you will see in any agency that is wanting to make changes to their performance measures, you will see one of these forms, request to modify. You'll see what their rationale is. And you will also see on, this is a few pages later, on page 34 of the Board of Nursing, you'll see a review of the request to modify performance measures. During the interim, a work group, a small review team really is what it was, made up of members from BAM, DAS, myself from our office, someone from the Secretary of State's office, and a few agency experts in performance measures, looked at all the requests to modify and then provided a review. And this is strictly, for your information. It is kind of the review team's cut at if they think this request to modify is a good idea or not. And so you'll find that information on this form, the review to request to modify performance measures. And in this case, under number one, it says that the reviewer recommends approving the modification to key performance measurement number two. And so that they say it's important to have the calls answered by a live representative and not go to the automated system, and that's what they want to measure. And the changes that they suggest for doing that make sense, at least to the review team. Now, again, this is just advisory. There's nothing that controls over your decision on if you want to approve that request. It's just there for some additional information. After the links form, you'll see one form that's the data sources. So there is a place that tells you, for the Board of Nursing, it's page 29, and for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, it's page 36. And this just lists the sources of data for each measure, so that if you have questions about where the information came from, where they got their data, you can refer to this section to see what they're using that goes into the performance measurement. And probably the second, I think that the links to benchmarks is most likely the form you'll be looking at the most in here. I would suggest you also look at the last form that's in the budget I'll be talking about, is the performance measure data summary. And for the State Board of Nursing, that's page 31. And for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, I believe it is page 34. And this is the time series that we were talking about. This provides you not just the one data point and the target that you see in the links form, but it provides a historical set of data for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman for performance measurement number one. You'll see that they have data going back to 1999, and then they have targets going forward from 03, 04, 05, 06, 07. And the same is true for, I believe the Board of Nursing has a number of measures that they've been measuring for a while. So this is where you can go to get an idea of what trend is going on with the performance measures that you're reviewing. And these are listed for each measure. Now, if you look at if you have the Board of Nursing, you may wonder why there are two lines for performance measurement number two, and that's because all agencies were required to report the old information from the measure, and then just to list the measure as it would look if the change were to occur. And that's why there's no information, because the first one is the change that they're requesting to make. And the second one is what was approved last time and the information that was gathered for that measure.
Question, Senator Carter.
Please tell me, long-term care budget, page 34, I think it is, yeah. So when we look at the average time to close non-referred cases, it's so volatile. What happens in terms of them fulfilling our mission and making sure that they do a better job on in those cases?
Mr. Chair.
You see what I'm talking about?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Senator Carter, that's a perfect segue for the next piece of information I was going to provide you.
Okay.
Because on the inside folder of on the folder in the inside flap, you'll see I stuck a copy of the annual performance report.
Got it.
So if you pull that out and look at, I believe I didn't copy the whole report. I just copied a few. But what the annual performance report is, every agency every year is required to discuss their performance. And I believe that would be, let me find the right one, for the long-term care ombudsman. I believe the measure you're talking about would be on page 7 and 8. Oh, no, let's see. No, I'm sorry, that would be page 6. And page 5 and 6. Page 5 in particular. So on page 5 of that annual report, you see that that's where you see the data at the top.
Yes, I do.
And you see the changes. And then you also see a graph. Every agency is required to put a graph in there so you can see graphically how the data's changed. And there is a question in here asking about explaining the results. So it says for about halfway down, one of the questions is compare the actual performance to the target and explain any variance. And they say that in 04, the agency made a significant improvement in the response time to non-referred complaints, reducing the time. And while it falls short of their target, it does reverse the increase since 99. Then it goes on to say that the agency has readjusted the targets for 06 and 07. I think that these are also new for this session, these annual performance reports. I think they're going to be very, very valuable tools when you're looking at agency performance, because it gives you a lot more in-depth information on each of the performance measures, how they've been doing, gives them an opportunity to explain any changes, variances, if they haven't been able to achieve their target. And they can be rather long, because they maybe are a couple pages for each measure, and if an agency has 30 measures, you know, it's a significant report. But each budget has one of these in there. So does the Board of Nursing also has one in the inside flap of the front cover of the notebook. Maybe I'll just take a couple minutes just to go over highlight briefly what it is that this annual performance report is expected to do, and really it's to compare actual agency progress to the performance measure targets, explain the variance that's occurred. Discuss any actions that they plan as a result of the performance data analysis, and to include a comparison of performance measure data from similar agencies, jurisdictions, or industry standards. So we really keep building on the system over time, and I think this is going to be a very valuable piece of a tool for you when you look at agency information and agency performance measures.
Question, Senator Berger, Representative Smith, and then Senator Winters.
Yes, I wonder, Mr. Siebert, if you could just help me understand why it is better for agencies to come up with their own performance measures rather than those performance measures being given to an agency as goals.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, I think that we have historically allowed agencies to propose their own performance measures, and at least initially, because one, they know what data they have available, so they know what they can collect and report without a lot of extra expense. They also presumably know their programs very well. We would hope that agencies are using performance measures as management tools. If you don't have some way of tracking how you're doing as a manager, it's difficult to ensure that your programs are on the right course. And so a number of agencies have had performance measures over time that they have used internally to track what they do. Now, having said that, there is nothing that prohibits a subcommittee from adopting measures that they want to see tracked. In fact, we have done that. I know working in the Natural Resource Subcommittee last session, we did that in a number of cases. In fact, one agency, I believe it's the only agency, the subcommittee and Four Ways and Means was not at all satisfied with their performance measurement system and didn't approve any of their performance measures and told them to go back and start over with some direction. And then that's something that they've worked at over the interim, reported continually to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, finally had that approved by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and those are new measures that you will see this go-around. But absolutely, if you see a hole, that's the value of having your input in this whole process, is to allow you to say, we want to see this track. We think that this will tell us the story that we want told.
Yeah, that's a very good explanation. I mean, the idea here, real simply, is that theoretically agencies are supposed to know what they're doing, and therefore we let them have the first cut at it. However, we are the policymakers, not they. Sometimes that gets lost in the shuffle. So it is up to the subcommittee to review those and see if those really meet the needs of your constituents and the people of the state of Oregon. Sometimes the bureaucracy gets skewed a little bit, has a slightly different orientation from where maybe the people are most interested in seeing the outcomes and results. So it gives you a chance to marry the two without us micromanaging them or ignoring them entirely. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Verger asked my question, but I'd like to make a statement following up on that. I think our department heads, our agency heads, are honest and well-intentioned and working for the best of the state. I think it's very naive of this committee to assume that we know all the key performance measures and to think that these agencies aren't giving us the key performance measures that best reflect their work. You get into departments such as Department of Human Services or the Department of Transportation, and again, I think it would be very naive of us to think that we truly know all the performance measures we ought to be tracking in departments of that magnitude.
Thank you, sir. All right. Senator Winters, I believe.
Just as we, the more, each session we refine the performance measures, you know, and each session we find something different to either add or subtract from. As I look at particularly long-term care ombudsman, and I'm sure that there are others that fall in this category, where you have a history from 99 up to 2007, and because we're trying to link both the performance with budget, it may be very helpful that the budget figure is also added, because then I can look right to that column and I can see with how they're getting their target with budget, rather than we spend so much time flipping back and forth. And I think that can be done and added with not a whole lot of effort. But you can then begin to track and begin the budget linkage then with some of the outcomes. Because that's really, over time, is where we're trying to get to. We're trying to link budget discussions with what they're doing. And so you may want to think about that when you get together for your agency meeting. And it's my understanding at one time in history that there were legislators involved with helping to process some of the agency requests, and I don't know if that still exists, but if not, maybe there's someone on this panel who might want. I know I was involved at one time with you, that some individuals who were really concerned about this issue may want to help and assist staff.
We have done that in the past. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. You know, and this is going to be a playoff on what Senator Verger really asked, too, because it's one of the frustrations I've seen year after year up here in Ways and Means. The questions you don't know to ask are the ones that are usually the most important, quite often anyway. And the verification of the data is very important. We ran into problems both sessions, the last two sessions, but especially last session with verification of data. My question is, has LFO or any other group of government here thought about or discussed bringing in outside auditors, outside analysis, outside of government, to look at some of the agencies? Has that been a discussion yet?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Bates, there have been some discussions of that. I do know that the Progress Board had someone look at the benchmarks and the performance measurement system as a whole for the state and to give some feedback. You can find that the results of that on their website. I don't think it was anything earth shattering, but it wasn't agency specific, and so I think that is certainly worth something to discuss further. I would also like to say that in a few weeks, I believe it's on Friday, February 4th, we're going to have some people from the NCSL that work with legislating for results come in, and one of the questions we've asked them is to look at least at our system and give us some feedback of what they think, how our system looks, what they've learned from experiences in other states where we maybe could find some improvements. But again, that's more system examination rather than agency specific.
I think Paul Reiske, but that'd be a great opportunity for all of us, some of us with more, some of us less knowledge of what we're trying to do, ask these guys who are reviewing all states about what their successes and failures are, how do they verify the data, you know, in other states and have maybe some success. That would be very, very smart to attend that session and get that information.
The follow-up comment? Yeah, the reason I brought that forward is because some of the best data I've gotten on DHS did not come from the agencies or from LFO. It came from public-private corporations, which have told us what's going on out there in the field. And it's been a real disconnect at times what we hear from one group versus the other group of what's actually happening as far as the clients are concerned. It continues to be a real concern for me, and I'll continue to express that through the session, as you well know.
I've got Senator Nelson, Representative Morgan, and Senator Gordon. I'd kind of like to move on, if that's possible. And excuse me, Senator Morgan.
Thank you, sir. Just on your goals, agency goals, we're going to be in a budget priority. Are these agencies' goals as listed in these summaries, are they the goals, priority goals for the agencies, or is they just put down in any particular manner, shape, or form? I mean,
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Nelson, I don't believe they're necessarily prioritized. They're just listed. They need to make a logical link to what their mission is. So, you know, you have a kind of a broad mission for an agency, and then usually you have subsets of goals of how they can achieve that mission. And then we've asked that they link the measures to those goals to see how they're doing on achieving those goals, in essence. Now, I will say, to steal a little bit of some of the later presenters' thunder, we have in the prioritized list that you'll be spending time looking at, where we've asked agencies to prioritize their services, we've included a portion there, or a column, where they are to identify which performance measures relate to that program. So that will give you an idea if, you know, you have to do a little bit of flipping back and forth by looking at their links form and seeing what the measures are. But you can say for program A, they say we watch performance measurement 1, 5, and 6, for example. And I think that a good key for you when you're looking at these would be if there's nothing in that box that says for this program we have no performance measures. We have no formalized way of tracking our progress towards the results that are linked to that particular program that they've prioritized.
Thank you. Representative Morgan, your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Performance measures is something that I've worked on all the time that I've been in the budget process in the building, and it has been, I think, real interesting to watch the evolution of it. I think the most work was done in the last budget cycle, and there was a lot of stress put by the co-chairs on taking a look at the performance measures, figuring out how relevant they are to the desired outcomes for the state agencies, and talking a lot about the measurement, how you're measuring the performance measure, the quality of the data, that is accumulated to come up with the quantitative part of the performance measure. And I would hope that in this budget cycle, the co-chairs continue very clear instructions to the people in this process to continue to refine them. I think performance measures are always going to be a work in progress. We're never going to arrive at a set of them that are going to work forever and be perfect. And we need to be very diligent in checking them out and making sure that they are doing what we want them to do. The other part that I think might help close the loop for some folks is that in a number of budgets, there was instruction put in the budgets for agencies to do specific things with their performance measures. And those committees those agencies reported to the Joint Audit Committee that met over the interim. And we did a lot of work in that committee in kind of updating and finalizing performance measures for agencies, and some agencies had no performance measures, and so they were put in place over the interim. But I think people need to understand that that we're kind of taking baby steps on this, and this is far from a perfect process. I think one of the big challenges we're going to face as we use these measures to rank the effectiveness of programs is that the data underneath of these performance measures is very shallow. And it's going to be a challenge to be able to use some of that data to predict whether the programs are actually doing what they're supposed to do or not.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Briefly, Mr. Co-Chair, I was hoping that Representative Morgan would speak. She did an excellent job last session of leading the education subcommittee into this area of performance measures. And I think one of our learnings was how important it is to stay focused. You can get drawn off in a lot of other areas that don't have anything to do with staying focused on the performance measures. So that would just be an admonition to stay focused. But again, it was an excellent excellent leadership on the representative's part.
Thank you. Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Chair, I was going to talk about the quality rather than the quantity of the service, and I think Representative Morgan touched on that, because I know it's difficult to measure whether or not the quality of health care is measurable. You know, how do you measure quality? It's easy to measure quantity, and I think that's what most of these are. We're going to do more of something, but how do we know they're doing better when they're doing more of something? So,
now, there's a big difference between outputs and outcomes, and we'll all get more comfortable with that as we go through this process. And Mr. Siebert, we're having entertaining and excellent questions to help members clarify, but we do want to move ahead, so make sure you hit the 7 points. I'll make one comment just to drag that out a bit longer. What I'm taking from this, and we'll learn more as a newcomer or even as a old-timer here, the two key reports that are the 30,000-foot view would be the performance measure data summary, you know, that's in our binders, and then these annual performance reports. That gives you the real clear comparisons, and from that, if something strikes your eye, you then can dive down into the detail that Mr. Siebert alluded to earlier. So that's a nice way for members of the committee to get their hands around this very difficult and seemingly complex subject. Mr. Siebert, rapidly.
Mr. Co-Chair, I just wanted to touch on a couple more things. And one is, last session, agencies weren't required to put targets in for their measures. Most did, but they weren't required to. This time, they're absolutely required to. And that's one place that we are going to be looking to you for some input, is into looking at these targets that agencies have set for their performance measures, and some dialogue of how you feel the target is. Is it too high? Is it too low? Is it just about right? And that's one thing we're going to really ask that you kind of focus on, because of course that is the for lack of a better term, the benchmark that we'll be gauging success on as we watch these in the future. Just briefly, also wanted to mention that in a number of cases, you'll see a measure that is just called a customer service measure placeholder. DAS has been working during the interim to identify a measure that's consistent across all agencies for customer service, the kinds of things we want measured to see how they're servicing the customers that they have. And you'll be hearing more about that from agencies as we go forward. We'll have to think more about how to formalize adopting the kind of uniform customer service measure, but I just wanted to point that out because you'll see that in agencies' performance measurements. And that's it.
Very good, Mr. Seifert. Good. You obviously got the members engaged, which is good thing. Very, very good thing. Appreciate it. Well, let's move on. The next topic is the Ways and Means Presentation Guidelines to the Agencies. On this one, I'd ask that the members write down your questions, because it's a little complex. We're doing things somewhat differently than previous sessions. So write your questions out so Doug can get through the whole thing, because he may answer some of your questions in the course of his discussion.
Mr. Chair, staff is passing around a revised version of the guidelines. We have sent guidelines out back in September or early October to agencies on what to prepare. We redid these basically yesterday and last night to reflect the thinking of the co-chairs on how the process will work. And so as I go through these, it's sort of both a content of what you will be hearing and the process, and I encourage the co-chairs to jump in at any point and clarify, you know, mostly in terms of the process. Hopefully everyone's getting this, and it should go behind tab 2 in your books that you have in front of you. Generally, we've laid out some general principles and guidelines. First of all, we want presentations to be generally consistent, but at the same time provide the agency with some flexibility, recognizing that agencies are significantly different from each other. Department of Human Services, in terms of how they present their information, is going to be much different than someone like the Board of Nursing or the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, because just the sheer size and the organization and the size of the programs. We're asking agencies to get us outlines of their presentation a month before they present them. That will be a challenge since we're likely to start in the next 2 weeks, and they'll be getting these new ones probably later today, hopefully via email. But we'll continue to hold them to that standard as much as we can. We are also asking them to get a final version of the presentation materials to LFO for distribution to you all roughly a week in advance of when they would be in front of the subcommittees to give you time to go through the materials. We want agencies to provide information on their missions and programs, performance measures, really how and what they do prior to diving into details on the budget. And we'll see in the process portion of this what the importance of doing that. On the fifth bullet there on the first page, you'll see what we expect LFO's role to be as well as the BAM staff's role to be, which will be slightly different from previous years. And I won't go into the detail of that. We'll get to that in a little bit later on. The co-chairs have decided to split the public hearing process into three phases, or the budget process. The first phase, and I'm on the second from the last bullet on the first page there, the first phase is to provide information necessary to prepare a list of prioritized programs and service by the subcommittee for their agencies in relation to performance measures and other information and factors that the agency has. And that will be done for major agencies. And the co-chairs have a list of those agencies, but, you know, generally they're the larger agencies that have significant amounts of general fund or large agencies in general. So you won't see the health-related licensing boards as part of that phase, but you will see higher education, corrections, state police, human services, those kinds of programs. The second phase, after subcommittees have done some initial prioritization and provided that to the co-chairs, second phase will provide further information, both program information and budget, the more budget detail and information in that second phase for those major agencies that are part of phase one and all other agencies. And that would work and prepare subcommittee members for work session and final budget
decisions. And the third phase would consist then of the actual work sessions and budget decisions that have primarily done throughout the session in previous years. The time frame there is in the last bullet. The first phase would be completed by March 11th. So this is different from previous years. So we're more condensed, but we're doing this with fewer agencies and not getting into the budget detail as much as taking a look at making sure subcommittee members understand what the role of the agency, their mission, the programs, the target group, and the performance measures and how those factor into the budget process. The second phase would then start after the subcommittees deal with prioritization, would start after that and run into, I believe, it's mid-April, I believe. I don't think I have the date down here. We'll get those dates to you real soon. Going to the second page, the agency overview. This is phase one and program priorities. The agency's presentation should describe the programs, their importance and significance, and describe how the agency manages this program so you understand what the programs of an agency are and why they exist and how they're provided. Again, for the larger agencies, it will likely be they do an agency overview and then go into each major program area. For small agencies, everything fits under that major umbrella, probably. And the content there on the third bullet, what we expect agencies to provide are the agency's missions, goals, historic perspective, their programs, their target groups, how they're organized and they deliver the program, and then the fourth arrow, I guess, is what we call those, an overview and description of the performance measures, how they fit into the agency's operation, how they use that in terms of a management tool, how they link to benchmarks, anything else the subcommittee feels that are important around the performance measures. And then the agency will present their prioritized list that they've submitted. Those have been submitted. Most of the agencies have submitted them, I believe, as well as their 10% reductions. And the subcommittee will go through that with the agency in terms of the prioritized lists. My guess that will be a sort of a process for the number of steps, because subcommittees may decide that they want the programs broken down a different way than the agency originally submitted that. So that will be a give and take process, I believe. That completes phase one. Phase two is the more traditional agency budget detail.
We're going to hold those questions if we could, unless it's really...
Actually, it isn't a question for him. It would be a question for you.
Yes,
could you provide us with a copy of the instructions that are sent to the agencies for the criteria in terms of prioritization programs?
We already have that. That's in the handout, I believe. Isn't
earlier...
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, actually the next presenter will be talking about the prioritization.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Phase two, large agencies will, this will be a few weeks, maybe a month or more after they provide their initial presentation. We'll then quickly review what they went over real briefly and then get into the more budget detail, talk more about the environment of what, the environment around their budget, the budget drivers, and get into the detail. LFO's role will be to basically set a perspective for you. The BAM staff role will be to sort of set the context in which the governor's budget was created, the decision-making process that went into the governor's budget, and in some cases for larger agencies, we will likely invite the policy advisor in the governor's office to be part of that discussion too, because it may be more than just one agency in public safety. That might be how they got to, you know, the 10 or 12 major agencies that make up public safety. So we may want to involve the governor's policy advisor in those discussions. The agency presentation in this area will be mainly around the budget detail, the environment, the budget drivers, specific actions that have been taken in the past, so you as subcommittee members understand how the agency got to the point they are. In many cases, you'll probably want to ask about what they've had to cut back and what the impact of those reductions have been over the past few years since the 01-03 biennium, caseloads, fees, all that traditional information as part of the budget presentations during that time period, and then to present the budget detail. What are the packages? Why is the budget growing? What new initiatives, if there are any, are part of the governor's budget, and what are the reductions? At some point in time, there we'll also ask the agencies to provide a list of what their legislation that goes along or accompanies the budget is. That may be in the first phase for larger agencies to make sure that is moving in the process through the policy committees, or for other agencies as may be part of phase two. That completes phase two, and then the next phase is the work session phase. LFO's role in that is to set the stage, make sure, remind members of the information they've seen in the budget decisions they've had to make. BAM's role will be similar to that, and to make sure that the governor's perspective is up front and what decisions he's made to get to that point, to make sure that you have a full understanding of what the governor's budget is so you can go forward into work session. And then LFO staff traditionally has led the work sessions. We have a standardized worksheet we will use. We'll present to the subcommittees at the first time we do a work session. And there's some other issues there on the last two pages that you can read at your leisure. But in one item is in terms of questions. Those have sat in Ways and Means know that that you are never shy about asking questions that often cannot be answered at the table. We will ask subcommittees to get back to the subcommittee and LFO for passage of those responses as soon as they can. Often in the past, we've sort of reserved the last part of the last day of the presentation to go over questions also. We will ask agencies to make sure they're in writing and, if necessary, present those responses. Some responses can be done in a matter of overnight. Some may take, you know, a week or two to get back, or even more, depending on the question. And, of course, staff, as well as the co-chairs and the subcommittee chairs, may need to filter some of those questions to make sure that we're not asking agencies to do too much, or may have to prioritize those. I think you discussed a little about those kinds of projects yesterday in here. So, Mr. Chair, that is a brief sort of outline of the guidelines and the process, and I encourage any questions or input.
Representative Prof, did you have any other questions?
Not this time, sir. Thank you.
All right. Senator Devlin and Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The question I had, I understand the process in terms of the first phase, which is 6 weeks, and basically reviewing all the major budgets within the committee and assisting the co-chairs in the development of the co-chair's budget and priorities. What I'm having a difficulty understanding is going beyond the issue of leaving the building, but when are we going to provide for public input into the process? And during the 6 weeks, will subcommittees be able to provide for public input? Because there may be some concerns expressed by members of the public if we go all the way into March before we have an opportunity for public input in the subcommittees.
Good question. My guess at this time, like the co-chairs are thinking the first 6 weeks will be agency and subcommittee. There will be the public will, during that process, the way I'm seeing it at this point in time, be able to see what the tentative priorities of those agencies are, just as the subcommittee. And then in the second phase of this discussion, as the subcommittee grapples with trying to do its own prioritization process, they will seek input from the public, and probably more public input at that point in time than in the first phase, where the agency is just showing us what their initial take is that we can respond to. I would also say, just as an admonition, that you can imagine that while it may, if you think the agencies are grappling with the performance outcomes, they're certainly grappling with prioritizing their own programs with their own agencies. As you might imagine, they're going to feel quite a bit of pushback, like every single one of us will, when we come out with our list. So it will be really important for the chairs and the members to push hard for the committee, for the people that theoretically, as we talked about earlier, know their agency the best compared to us, to try and give a good first cut at that. Follow up.
Oh, I understand that, and I think we can work within those guidelines. I would ask for some latitude from the co-chairs because I have may have some areas of the budget in my subcommittee where, while there may be a potential of an agency spokesman for that area of the budget, there may be other parties that are outside the building that have more detail on what the actual implications of those budget numbers are.
I think the co-chair is
going to grab code. That's code.
Heard we understand. Senator Morissette?
Well, I will defer to Senator Winters to carry the.
Senator Winters, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Just want to make a comment. I was just questioned and asked, what did BAM mean? And I think I was asked that question because, as you know, I issued a challenge to all of the chairs.
Working over, Dougie.
That we're going to speak in language that people understand, and I think it's very critical this session. We have a lot of new members. Thank you, Doug. You're contributing to the conference.
Hey, I'm Mr. Chair. Senator Morissette and Winters is the Budget and Management Division of Budget Staff for the governor.
This is just a follow-up for those of you who are listening. You know, the same as last session. This session also, we're encouraging you to give the actual definition, and so we're going to try to reduce as much as possible acronyms.
Mr. Chair, to play it safe, LFO means the Legislative Fiscal Office.
We'll give the subcommittee chairs latitude to approach that topic as they fit. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I appreciate Senator Winters. Yesterday, someone used the acronym BAM, and I didn't want to interrupt, and so I sat here and read through documents trying to figure out what BAM meant, and I figured it out, but her point is well taken because it took me a couple of minutes to find it.
Yes, Representative Crow.
Mr. Chair, a quick question for Senator Winters. Is abbreviations okay? If we're not going to use acronyms, can we say things like ledge, fisc, off, or whatever?
Just curious. If you think that the public will understand what you're saying. But if you think that they do not understand what you're saying, then no.
Fair enough. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just don't say anything, Representative.
I think you're correct.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Nelson.
Going back to phase one, thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to phase one, this agency's prioritized list of the 10% reduction options. Just explain that a little bit more to me. I mean, is it going to be a prioritized list and then another prioritized list with a 10% reduction, or is the 10% reduction part of the original package, or how does that all work out?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the next thing on the agenda is the prioritized list discussion, so it may be best just to wait till that.
Okay.
If we don't get the question answered, ask it again.
Sure. Thank you.
All right, this is our tentative starting point, ladies and gentlemen, and hopefully it'll be a productive one. The idea here is to send a clear message to the agencies that we are serious about these performance outcomes, and this will be the basis upon which they get money. And if they want to be successful in this process, those agencies that have a prioritized list in sooner rather than later will get scheduled. If they wait too long, as we know in this budget-limited environment, it may be difficult for them to get the funding that they think would best suit their purposes. So we are encouraging all the agencies, as well as the subcommittees, to approach this outcome-based budgeting process very seriously.
And to that end, Doug, do you know, have these revised guidelines been posted yet?
They will later today, is my understanding.
Okay.
Ken is working on a cover memo to go along with it.
And under no circumstances should any chair of any subcommittee allow an agency to use the revised guidelines as an excuse for not getting their material in. There are many agencies, although the deadline was January 14th, that are somehow not quite getting around to it. And so we at least should have had their original approach. And this is concerning to the co-chairs and should be concerned to every member of this committee.
Mr. Chair, just briefly, the first phase, you're considering that to be a six-week process. Second phase, time frame for that? What have you allotted?
We have that down. I don't have that right in front of us. It probably goes to about mid-April, so it's probably about a month, another 6 weeks, somewhere in that range.
Okay, very good.
We'll line that out for the committee so you guys
and
know.
Mr. Chair, if I understood the process that was described to staff was that second phase, there would be the opportunity to work session some of the smaller agencies during that phase as you know, the process goes along in the general fund and other large decisions. So items like the health licensing boards and other probably more non-general fund or very small general fund agencies could be work session during that second phase.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because we do have some agencies and programs that you just don't need to spend that great amount of time on. And if in that second phase you're able to work through and get the entire budget settled, then we will be encouraging you to do that. And to the same point, as Senator Schrader's commented earlier about those agencies who are cooperating, you know, those who are following this process and who are going to, who are the most cooperative, you know, like with anything, you know, they're going to see a lot more positive reaction from the Ways and Means Committee in getting their budgets out as quickly as we can.
Very good. Mr. Siebert has passed the mantle of some of this process to two other illustrious members of our legislative fiscal office. They've worked very hard this past interim. We have them before us.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chairs and members. I'm Robin Lamont, and with me is Susie Jordan, and we're going to do a brief overview of the priority form instructions that we sent to agencies. I'll do that, and then Susie will follow with a walkthrough of a completed some completed priority forms on the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to give you an example of how what you will be looking at as you walk through these. If you recall
Robin, these are in your booklet behind the first part of the discussion that we had this morning. Tab 3, I believe you put it in.
It should be tab 4.
Should say, I think your top line says instructions for completion of LFO budget priority.
Okay. If you recall, last legislative session, we had a somewhat informal, late prioritization process. We identified some problems with that process. For example, each subcommittee pretty much developed their own process and the level of detail that they went into. And in some cases, the priorities were developed outside of the budget structure, which made it very difficult then to try to translate those priorities back into agency budgets. And if you're interested, Doug has an example of the process from last session, which we can go over after we've completed this overview. So LFO decided to work on a uniform process that would provide the subcommittees with the detail that they needed while ensuring that the priority outcomes could be incorporated into the budget, and the instructions that you see in front of you reflect this. Priority exercise involves three steps. Number one is setting priorities by program or division. Number two is setting priorities agency-wide. And number three is identifying 10% reductions agency-wide for all fund types by priority. First, the program division. LFO has requested that agencies list and rank the activities within each program or division. This will provide you with detailed information on the activities that are being ranked. The activity ranking will include a description of the activity, the funding level in the governor's budget, and the staffing levels. We have also asked that agencies identify the legal authority for each activity, the key performance measures that are linked to that activity, and the primary purpose for which the program or priority exists. We've gone a little farther and asked them to use a code for those primary purposes, which will enable us, if we so choose to sort all of the priorities by specific purposes. So across program areas, across agencies, we may be able to identify all of the activities in the state that are focused on, let's say, public safety or any of the other categories that are listed. And the priority worksheet also identifies any program option packages that are included in the governor's budget. So you will see within the priority ranking any program options that the governor has allowed. On the agency-wide worksheet, LFO has requested that agencies complete a separate agency-wide ranking of all activities. The ranking will include a priority at the program or division level. For example,
in the number one priority in Division A could be the number 10 priority for the agency as a whole, and Susie will walk you through how that works. After the agency-wide ranking is complete, agencies are requested to add the agency-wide ranking to the program division priority worksheet, so you will see it at both levels. And finally, LFOs ask that agencies compute a 10% reduction, and that reduction is to the governor's recommended budget. We've had difficulty in the past with agencies bringing forward a 10% reduction that reflected the 10% reduction that was included in the governor's budget, which gives Ways and Means nothing to work with. So this reduction is in addition to whatever reductions, additions, or other adjustments the governor has made in his budget. Agencies are requested to prioritize the reductions based on the activity priorities that were already established. Again, what we were looking for is to not have an agency say, this is our number one priority, and, oh, by the way, that's where we're taking our 10% reduction. So it will give the staff and members a cross-check as to how the agencies are identifying these reductions. Agencies are also requested to describe how the reductions will be made and the staffing and program impact of the reductions. Once the agency-wide reductions have been developed, the information will be added to the division priority program worksheet. So as you're looking at the final completed division and agency-wide worksheet, you will see the 10% reductions and how they compare to the priority rankings that the agencies are doing. And with that, if there aren't any questions, I will turn it over to Susie to walk you through the completed forms that should be behind your tab.
Questions? I think I'd just like to commend. I'm sorry, a question?
I was just going to do what you were going to do and commend them for their work during the interim. We started it last session, and it's much more comprehensive and very well done.
Thank you.
Representative Krupp.
Could you just reiterate, I want to make sure that I heard you correctly, talking about the 10% reduction of what the governor, in the governor's budget, you're saying that the 10% reduction, there's another 10% reduction option that we're asking for beyond that?
That's correct.
Okay. So, and both of those will be clearly defined so that we can...
Well, let me clarify, okay. Representative Krupp. We are asking them to take 10% above whatever the governor's budget includes. Now, the governor's budget may include a 10% reduction or a 20% reduction or some reduction. We're asking them to then give us 10% on top of whatever it was that the governor approved, whether it was an increase, a reduction, or whatever.
Historically, just the problem we used to get into is they were always required or requested by the governor to come up with their 10% reductions. The governor would include those in his budget, and there's little room for the subcommittee then to make thoughtful choices because the governor would take all or some of those. And when it's we're in this budget-limited environment, it may be incumbent upon these bodies to look deeper. So this is a very thoughtful response by LFO to a problem we've had perennially. So I really appreciate the really thoughtful work. And I think that the real point here is that we're going to prioritize within the agency, and then the committees have to prioritize across that whole program area being public safety, agency being corrections, say, for instance. So we'll try and do this in real thoughtful, building block-like manner as we go through the process. Susie.
Okay. Before I start walking you through the forms itself, I'm going to direct your attention to a memo that is the last page under tab 4 that the governor's office sent out to agencies, giving them further direction on how to prioritize. And in essence, what he's asked them to do is to include in their prioritization process or criteria is the governor's principles and making sure that they follow certain criteria. So there's some consistency across all agencies when it gets to the legislature. So I just wanted you to have that piece of information as well. Now I'm going to direct your attention to the first page of the spreadsheet that's in your
Doc Van. I apologize for the but I wanted to make sure I could get it in your notebook, so I'll just go through each of the columns with you. The first page is a program unit within the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and it is their merchandising program. This agency chose to provide a short description of what the merchandising program is in the fourth column on the first line, so that you had some reference points. And we didn't ask for that, so you may not see that in all agencies, but you might see something like that underneath the detail. Just for your information. So in the first column, that is the department priority number. So department-wide, this agency is giving distribution a number one priority. It is also the number one priority for that program unit area. Following the first four columns are the funding columns, so you can see that their funds are other funds. There's no general fund. And then we have them total it. The number of positions, number of FTE, whether or not there's a policy package included in that number is a yes or a no, and it is. And then they have a 10% reduction amount to their number one priority. And then they tell you under the code whether it is constitutionally driven, federal fund statute, or debt service. Those are what the four letters stand for. And whether there are any citations, they have identified the whole program under Article 1, Section 39, so they didn't repeat that. And then they identified the key performance area and the primary purpose of the program they have identified as economic development. Underneath that is a box that was supposed to document the criteria that they used to make their prioritization. So in there, they will define for you. Some of them will be more verbal than others. There will be more verbiage in there. Some will be very short. I have seen both ways. So if you move to the second page, this is their second program unit. This is their regulatory program. And you can see in the second column that their priority for regulatory field operations is sixth for the department, but first in this program area. In here, they have lumped it all into a $10.3 million. Now, this is a fairly small agency. You may, as a subcommittee, want more detail about what's in a $10.3 million. You know, what is regulatory field operations? We could, they could define that further and prioritize it more if that's too big a number, given the context that you are reviewing their budget in. Now, we have much larger agencies that we have seen some numbers so far come in at, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in one line, so we are asking them to break those down a little more. Where that's possible, or explain why they can't and what would make more sense in prioritizing the activity. For example, in the Department of Transportation, they have their highway programs broken up into types of projects, bridges, preservation, modernization, and they have large numbers in there. Now, what they do there is they include right-of-way acquisition, they have engineering consultants, that sort of thing, but all of those things work together to create a project. The only way to prioritize that program would to be do more projects or do less projects, not to take out right-of-way, not to take out engineering and that sort of thing. So you're going to have to look at it in context of what the budget is. And again, the positions FTE, whether there's a policy package or not, they've chosen not to take any of their reduction in this area. Etc. So the third page is another program, same format. Program four is another program area in your capital improvements. And then the next page is the department-wide priorities all on one page. So you can see the department priorities listed next to each of the program priorities. It's all summarized in one place, as are all the 10% reductions in column 15. And then the total budget. And the last part of your worksheet
is the detail of the 10% reduction and what the impact of that reduction would be, so that you have some context to make your decisions and whether you're going to reduce the budget or not, or increase the budget, whatever the case may be.
Co-chair, and then Representative
Susie, on the determinations by the agencies of their priority mandate, constitution, statute, is there any check on that? I mean, is it from LFO staff, or is that going to be left for the subcommittees to make a determination?
We will check that.
Okay, so
check that.
What I get to is that, you know, there's a lot of things people can fit under the Constitution in a very general way,
mm-hmm.
but if it's not a specific mandate in the Constitution, then, you know, I just kind of looking at trying to get it to flow down a little bit.
Right. That is part of what we will do as your staff, is verify that.
Representative Smith and Representative Crook.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to extend my praise to Susie and Robin and to you co-chairs for this process. I guess I've served on Ways and Means four years, and in the past I've been a little bit critical in the way information is presented, and I think this is fabulous. I think this is a really neat approach. It's systematic, and it's going to allow us to go through and to be able to ask additional questions in a thoughtful manner. So thank you, and great job.
Appreciate it very much. Representative Crook.
Now, Mr. Chair, I would echo those sentiments, too, by the way. I think this is it's a very appropriate and timely change and opportunity, I think, for us as legislators to have better information for us to make what I would hope would be better decisions in a tough time. Quick question for the co-chairs. What would be the process if we disagreed with some of the prioritizations as a subcommittee or members of how the agency has prioritized? What do we do in that process if we disagree?
You change them.
Okay. That's the whole idea. Is, I mean, they're presenting their priorities to you for validation or modification. And, you know, as representatives of the people of Oregon, you're the ones that are making that final determination on what their priorities should be as an agency.
Thank you.
Senator Winters.
Ms. Lamont and Ms. Jordan, again, thank you, because it is a job well done. Where would one find the dollar distribution to cities and counties?
That in this particular agency, that's a revenue distribution, and so you'll find that in their budget document.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Actually, we'll have Robin and Susie stay there if that's okay.
Sure. Representative was
co-chair again, part of our education. Thank you. We will then see how much the commission is making on profit and how much they're selling. Is that part of our review? Thank you.
Okay, thanks. We're hoping to do briefly, very briefly, Senator Devlin, was to have a representative from the Public Safety Ways and Means Subcommittee from last session chat briefly about, you know, what they did last session. They were one of the ones that got closer to what we're trying to accomplish this session than some of the other subcommittees. And in fairness to everybody, this was something that came up. The whole prioritization process came up as we were walking in the door, if you will. It was something the co-chairs last session tried to get going, if you will, on the fly. And that's why I think, you know, a lot of subcommittees struggled and analysts struggled, and it was difficult to get it to where we wanted. We learned a lot from that experience, as you can see, as reflected by Paul and Robin and Susie's work and Doug's work, the whole LFO staff. So we expect great things this session because we're getting after it early. We've appraised the agencies of it early. But how does this all function in real life, to follow up on Representative Krupp's question? And I guess I'd ask Senator Devlin, with the committee's indulgence, to chat briefly, ask him some questions, and we'll probably have Doug Wilson chat from an analyst perspective. You know, okay, there's better ways, and I think Robin alluded to this, there's better ways to go through this process than others, and we want to make sure to the greatest extent possible that all the committees are looking at it somewhat through the same prism, you know, with a lot of latitude, but somewhat through the same prism, so we're staying appropriately within boundaries of where we need to be operating. So with that, Senator Devlin, would you just let us know what you felt?
Okay. Thank you. Both co-chairs. This the process last time was driven by the same type of budget situation that we have now in terms of too many requests for expenditures compared to revenue available, sort of a basic premise that we often find ourselves in. I have to give a lot of credit for this, actually, to Doug and to former Representative Patridge, because as the subcommittee chair, he really took it upon himself to actually look at priorities within that subcommittee and to do it in a very systematic way so that we made fairly clear judgments. He put together the original list with Doug and with some of the stakeholders and then shared it with the committee and shared it relatively often with me during the session. I like to think that's because Representative Patridge and I disagreed on about 95% of items and about 99.5% of items in public safety, not the fact that I was the ranking and only Senate member of the committee and he had to have my vote to get anything out of the committee.
Absolutely.
But we went through and we ranked everything. Now, remember that by the time that we had this ranking, we were reacting to the co-chair's budget. And that co-chair's budget had significant reductions in public safety from what the governor's budget was. Actually, we had significantly less revenue. We were given a target by the co-chairs at that time of $85 million. Go in and try to fix public safety with $85 million. To be fair, that was the number for public consumption. There was another $20 or $25 million on top of that that came from some increased criminal fines and assessments and other things, but we had 85. Ultimately, that was put at 80. But it meant that we would get to points in this where we would basically get to a point. I'll give you an example, the Public Defense Services Commission. If you look, I think it's about line 80, something like that, 83, where it says, Public Defense Services Commission, adult person misdemeanors, prosecution thereof or defense thereof, so to speak, is what you're really speaking about, is that before we started to put in the $80 million or $85 million that we have, that's basically where we ran out of money for the Public Defense Services Commission. Now, many of you would know that an adult person-to-person misdemeanor, one of the principal ones that the public is concerned about is driving under the influence of first-time offense. Politically, it was very unpalatable not to be prosecuting. I have to back up here briefly just so that people understand this. This is the Public Defense Services Commission, but you can't prosecute someone that doesn't have counsel either under the Oregon or the U.S. Constitution. So if we can't provide them counsel and they need counsel, it means they're not going to be prosecuted, basically what it comes down to. So we added back in very systematically what we thought were the highest priorities. Some of these might surprise you. Some of them that won't surprise you if you think about it, because we started with constitutional, is the death service. Those were some of our highest priorities. Criminal appeals were one of our highest priorities. But you get down in here and you'll find some things that you'd be surprised that when we went through sort of the list of required by constitutional, federal or state, federal and state cases, federal law, state law, some things that we were doing ranked a lot lower than people would normally think. Give an example here. Well, think of something here that won't really surprise you. Okay. Incarceration of reprieve property offenders.
What number, Richard?
Item 64. That's clearly, that would be a priority for the public and a priority for us, but it ranks much lower than many other items on the list. Also, I think there was some general discussion in the committee with the state police that actually many of the functions that the state police perform beyond patrol services rank much higher in our rankings than patrol services. just to be fairly frank, because what we were hearing both from chiefs of police and from sheriffs were that the services that the state police provides to them are a higher priority than patrol services. And I'll turn it over to Doug.
Questions for Richard or comments?
Well, quick comment. I was on that committee too, and this relates a little bit to Representative Crump's discussion on it. Can we change the priority? We established some priorities amongst the committee, and one of the priorities was making the whole justice system work, which for individual agencies may not have been as high a priority compared to their own individual needs. And I think that helped drive some of these things, like Police Lab. State Police Lab was a very high priority in terms of getting the whole system to work, but it wasn't necessarily a real high priority of the state police. So that's it's real important to establish your committee criteria, like you looking at the whole system or a value that the committee has to use as a screening in a way to compare the department, individual department's priorities.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordon.
If I may ask a question for clarification, I'm confused. As you were developing the criteria, Senator Devlin, how much of that criteria was committed to a public document that everyone understood that was what was guiding you?
This was actually available and I think was discussed several times in committee, and so it was available to the public to see what this priority list was.
You're missing a piece, and I'm missing in my communication to you. I'm asking, what was the criteria used to develop the ranking?
Well, to be fair, Senator Gordley, I would have to say that the Public Safety Committee is probably, to some extent, more agency-driven than other committees in the sense, and they're both state agencies and local agencies, in the sense that, going back to Representative Hansen's comment, we were basically trying to make the system work. And so we were consulting with a lot of basically agencies that are within that system. Although we received some public comment in the committee, it was actually relatively rare for members of the public to come to the committee and testify on issues. It was not rare for agency members to come and testify to the committee. In fact, I think one of the things that surprised people is that we had so many chiefs of police and so many sheriffs come in and testify in favor of increased expenditures for the Public Defense Services Commission because they couldn't have their cases prosecuted unless funds were there. But in terms of public input, I think that was relatively rare. It was invited, but it was rarely received. One of the things that I'm going on too long, Mr. Co-Chairs, but I wanted to comment also on the thing that Representative Hansen brought forward and put it in context. Many of you were here, but some of you were not. We were trying to make the system work that was basically at that point falling apart. We were not prosecuting cases because the courts were not operating enough days. We were running out of money for the Public Defense Services Commission. Forensics labs were in disarray. They'd been cut, added back, cut again. We were basically having all kinds of problems, and I think the subcommittee very clearly felt that its principal duty was making the system work, basically so that there, because it is very clearly, maybe even more than almost any other area in our budget, an actual system and look at element by element by element.
I think in some response to Senator Gordley's question, I don't think there was a formal criteria set up, and that's something that different subcommittees may want to look at this coming session. But again, this is sort of done on the fly. Let's go to it. Okay.
And may I comment on that, what you just said, sort of done on the fly?
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
Yes.
In human services, if I can use that as an example, we had a formalized process that we all understood. It was in writing. The public understood. It was in writing. It was a document. What I'm hearing here is a little troubling to me, because I still I see the results of a process, but I'm still not clear on the criteria used to inform the results. So someone needs to help.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gordley, let me see if I can help.
Thank you.
To a large extent, what happened in the Public Safety Subcommittee was an outgrowth of the public safety overview that was done jointly with Ways and Means and with the Judiciary Committee, which I made a very clear attempt to define where the problems were within that system. And the public safety system is pretty much unique. You're not going to find the same kinds of real cause and effect linkages between agencies that you do in some of the other program areas. But the basis for the prioritization really came out of that overview and the issues that were identified in the overview. And hopefully, I hope, the overview that we're planning for next week will help with again, establishing the basis for developing priorities for the public safety system. Other mechanisms are going to be needed for other program areas because, like I said, you don't have the level of linkage with agencies that you do in the public safety system. Mm-hmm. That's helpful.
Moving along, I guess the thing I would take from this worksheet that they used last time, I'm just a country boy, so I'm very straightforward, need to understand things. If you look at their priority column on this sheet, it may be easier for some subcommittees as they grapple with how to prioritize these programs to put them in lumps of ones, twos, threes, and fours, and then start to try and break things down. I think it's really important to notice that they went down to the program level. This is a very well done, fairly detailed sheet. Human Services and some of the other subcommittees were successful. Others were not so successful in getting down to this level. We'd encourage the subcommittees to go there. And what would happen is there'd be a colored line drawn somewhere on this sheet that when the money runs out. And so it'd be very clear to members of the committee, members of the public, you know, what programs are actually going to get prioritized based on the money Oregonians have given us and which would not. And then I thought the other column that was really neat was the cumulative general, in this case, general fund. It's primarily a general fund-driven agency, so that's the most significant column for ODOT. It's not going to be. There'll be a different column you'll be looking at. But I think it's neat there because you can, again, kind of see how much money is being spent on a cumulative basis and right, where it runs out. So I thought the format was a good first start. We've improved on that.
Well, just a real quick question. We spent a lot of time in really trying to understand what all of the impacts were. For example, there's a lot of court fees that are collected, but you have to have courts in order to collect the fees. So there were some things, some dynamics that you had to understand that a $15 million cut to the judiciary, although it would save you $15 million in general fund, might also cost you a significant amount of revenue that comes in because that activity is not going to occur. And the way the Justice Department, as an independent agency, had prioritized their work, the lower important cases are the ones that probably drive the most fees. So it's a real balancing act.
Next, Senator Winters.
And Senator Gordley raised in Human Services, because of the magnitude of the number of individuals that you're dealing with, that committee, we chose to actually define the essential needs. And that became the criteria on which we based the priority list. And because we have so many advocates and because our need is to be a lot more transparent, that information was adopted by the full body, including its principles, including the priority list, and when, at what point, we no longer had the dollars available, so you had under the line as well as above the line. But you specifically set out, you know, the population, so that you're talking about seniors and children. Within those scopes, then the priority began to get into what levels of service we may or may not be able to support based on essentials. And so that was the track that we took in that committee last session.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The only thing I would comment on is that there was a lot of discussion on each one of these items in the sense of when we got to that line, what was a priority more than another priority, what was the interrelationship of items. I mean, if you want to slow the growth of prison population, one way to do it is simply not to prosecute as many cases, but that's not particularly publicly acceptable. Way to slow the growth of the prison population. But the other thing was is that we had an understanding from the beginning that the co-chair's budget at that point was a low water mark, and that we were going to be given a certain allocation to try to solve the problems. I think we may be in a slightly different situation in some committees now where that is basically the mark that we have, and there isn't really an add-back after that. You know, that's the point we will get to, and we'll have to try to do the best we can with the dollars that we have available. So there isn't going to be actually any potential pot of funds at the end of this process to solve some of these problems. We'll just have to make the best choices we can.
Chair, I just
wasn't. I was admonished to use the correct formalities here, and I apologize to
Mr. Chair, I just do want to add a couple notes of caution on the use of prioritization lists. In many cases, and this one was a good example, the program isn't necessarily matching how the agency budgets. If I turn your attention to the first page on number 24 for incarceration of Measure 11 offenders in Department of Corrections, you're not going to see a program in Department of Corrections budget that says incarceration of Measure 11 offenders. That is an estimated number. So keep in mind, in some cases, these numbers match a budget number. In some cases, they're estimated. And I urge you both caution and patience with agencies, because you may want to break things down in a way that is difficult for them to put numbers, attach numbers to, that are nothing more than estimates. And we'll have to work through that as both the staff and you as members to make that as easy as possible. But it is not an easy task when you're taking a look at some of these. The other word of not necessarily caution but point is that keep in mind that whatever the process ends up being, you're working from the bottom to the top of the list in prioritization. At the same time, there are things in the operation of the agency that may very well affect things at the top of the list that you can make small changes or marginal changes to, like incarceration of Measure 11. If you change the, you know, some staffing standards or whatever it might be, that number can change also. So there are savings as you use a prioritized list, but the work session process will also identify other savings that are in programs of higher priority.
And if I could make one other point, and you do see it illustrated on what was handed out to you, there are some particularly non-executive branch agencies that are coming into this process already in the hole. So your prioritization is going to have to factor in, for want of a better term, the underfunding in judicial and legislative branch areas.
Mr. Chairman,
last
comment.
Critical comment from Senator Devlin.
I don't know how critical it is, but I always like to correct my own errors. The first time I saw this again in like 6 months was this morning, and the DUI list is actually at 885. But you see what's interesting here is you see the amount that was given to it then, $7.8 million. That's just the indigent defense cost for DUIs in the state during that biennium.
That's a dollar. $1.
Yes. Co-chair.
Yes.
Well, Senator Schrader and committee members, I think it's been a great discussion this morning, and in respect for time, we're going to carry over a bit of this discussion tomorrow morning for before we move into the next topic. But just to kind of wrap up, and maybe, you know, as we've gone through some of the aspects of what we're going to do through this process, and I hope I'm not throwing cold water on this a little bit, but I also want to, but I do want to at least kind of impose a little dose of reality too. We are setting priorities as a team. You know, we are putting not just what's the priorities of an agency, but in context of your subcommittees, it's what's the priorities of that entire subcommittee, which is what you see here with the public safety. And then, basically with primarily the sub-chairs, the co-chairs, and input from each of you, we're going to blend the whole thing to find priorities of state government. And what I want to assure you, as I've talked with Kurt about this too, is that for all the work that we're going to be going through in these next few months, there's going to be some frustrations at the end. Frustrations about, you know, how much money is available, or, you know, how much is going to be allocated to various programs that you've worked very hard on. And, you know, there's also leadership decisions made in this, too, that all of a sudden, you know, where we're pointing you in one direction, you know, you may find those times come where all of a sudden, you know, things get shifted, and, you know, where you've worked really hard on getting a program settled, you know, the string just comes and pulls it right out from under you. And it's not in any way a reflection on the work you've done. We're telling you in advance. But it's a function of the funding available and making sure that we can, you know, within the context of the entire state budget, we are setting the priorities that we need to do to get this budget out. So it's a great process that we have to go through, and so too, you know, if there's a chance later on, you know, when we see a potential of additional funding, we have those priorities established, and we know, you know, if there's a place to add back, where we're going to do that. To Senator Devlin's comment, you know, we're not planning on add-backs. You know, we, as we said yesterday, we are going to use the March forecast, and you know, we also understand that there's a lot of contingencies that just are still out there. Court decisions haven't been decided. You know, we have certain things we need to make sure that we're going to be planning for the interim. And you know, at least from what we're seeing, if there's not a big difference between the March forecast and the May forecast, most likely that May forecast money is just going to be put in an ending balance. So, you know, it's those kind of decisions we're trying to get through this, you know, to, as we've seen things as they've been in the past, you know, look, I guess just don't anticipate we're doing the, you know, those kind of things the same way. You know, we are kind of looking at things a little bit. So beyond that, you know, I really appreciate the discussion and just great points that each one of you brought forward.
I'd echo that, and we'll adjourn until tomorrow morning, 8:30, where we'll go over a couple priorities and help you guys figure out how to work this process yourself. Thank you.
Sorry, Gary.
I'm okay.
Joanne?